Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW
Collision. Greg, Tony Khan had a big announcement. Did he tease that on social media, or is this out of nowhere? I wasn't on Twitter X today.
I don't remember seeing it, and most importantly, I don't remember seeing the outrage that would have come with him teasing such a big announcement so soon after the last big announcement. Yeah. I think I would have run into that backlash somewhere along the way today, but I didn't even see that.
Yeah, so we get our own stateside G1. Greg, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, if AEW had not been flush with tournaments, seemingly running all the time, then I think I would be a little more excited about this. But unfortunately, at least tonight, it comes off as, just another tournament. Now, it's incumbent upon AEW to make it feel like more than that. And I think they might. But, you know, we're also in a situation where they make a very big deal of the Owen Hart Cup every year. And really, that winner has very little lasting impact past that night. So you hope that with this announcement, and just by virtue of the length of it, that it's going to be something that AEW takes great care with, and it's something that is treated as a big deal from week to week, and it's something that's constantly being talked about by the wrestlers and the announcers and things like that, because I think this really does have the potential to be, you know, truly AEW's version of the G1, which is that, you know, the New Japan, the time of the year where people like me who pay cursory attention to New Japan throughout the year, they'll maybe pick up a show here or there. But when it comes to the G1, you know, we're all in. And I think AEW ideally would like to have that for its fans, where this is something that they really get invested in. They really try to do the math the way that fans of New Japan do the G1 and try to figure out who's going to advance, who's not going to advance, who's, you know, in the head-to-head matchups and things like that. So I have hopes that that's what AEW has in store for this and what Tony Khan has in store for this. But it's just, right now it just feels like another tournament, and it's hard to get excited about just another tournament.
Now, would it help if AEW creates ring canvases that are as outlandish and colorful as the NBA's in-season tournament going on right now? That's all the rage.
I was thinking that you were going to say, would it make it better if AEW created a new title for the winner of this tournament?
No,
of course I was going to jump on board with that.
I say it facetiously, but for this tournament, because it is, I think it's their first round-robin tournament. So I assume we'll have two brackets of six. And so there'll be every wrestler will have five matches against each other. I mean, because I believe it's G1 style, not just single elimination. 12 top wrestlers being facing each other November 22nd in a round robin tournament. The Continental Classic is what they're calling it. So unless they're using words loosely, that's a lot of matches where every wrestler in one bracket is going to face each other. What intrigues me about this, setting aside the joke, although actually I'll finish that thought. I wouldn't mind the ring having something distinctive about it that sort of announces visually that this is something special, because as you said, they've done a lot of tournaments, and you know the NBA is not stupid. Even if it's controversial, some of the courts that they've designed, they know it creates buzz. Controversy creates buzz, and they wanted it to be distinct from regular season games to give it a boost. So I hope visually they do something kind of special, not gaudy, but something special to signify when these Continental Classic tournament matches are happening. I'm intrigued. One of the criticisms, Greg, of Tony Khan, observations more than criticism, because it's not obviously a negative, it's just a choice, has been being a little stingy with matching big name wrestlers against each other. And you know, when Cody left and when Punk got fired, it was like, look at all the matches they left on the table that they could have had that would have drawn ratings or would have, you know, created a buzz that might have sold pay-per-view buys. And Tony kind of, it seems like he saves them and he doesn't want to just put them out there. I assume, and we haven't seen, and I don't think they've announced, you know, the bracket A, bracket B or whatever however they're going to designate it. But I'm intrigued with how many first-time matchups we get amongst big names, between big names, in AEW if they do a G1 style.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the other complaints about AEW these days is the amount of interference and the amount of non-clean finishes that you're seeing in TV matches, which is a common complaint of WWE. I would have to imagine that given this tournament that maybe we'll see that pulled back a little bit, and it'll be a little bit more pure in terms of the finishes and things like that. So it could give an opportunity for a little bit of a reset with the way the finishes are done in AEW. It'll be interesting to see what are the names in here, because, you know, you talk about the top names, but you can't have all the top names in the tournament. You know, you've got to have other storylines going on. You've got to have other pursuits going on near the top of the card. And so I'm intrigued to see what kind of balance this is going to look like in terms of Bryan Danielson type main event level wrestlers and, you know, the upper mid carders, the folks, the Miro types or the Andrade types who have a lot of upward mobility, but they're kind of stuck in this upper mid card area where they could get a boost into a real main event type slot if they do well in a tournament of this nature.
I think one of the keys for this working is basically asking fans who are the top 12 wrestlers in AEW, and at least 10 of them who are on almost everybody's list are in this tournament. I mean, I don't – like, they shouldn't put secondary guys in here. And you can debate, would you put in Claudio and Eddie Kingston? Both, are they – you know, is it necessary for them to be in it? Darby Allin, maybe, you know, I think he'd be on most people's top 10 list. He should be in it. I'm kind of, as the show's going on, kind of imagining like who would is there like almost an obvious 12, to put in here to give the tournament prestige. And I think, like, to me, there's like, these are names that just, if you're trying to make the tournament as prestigious as possible, you've got to have Kenny Omega, Bryan Danielson, Hangman Page, Penta, John Moxley, Darby, Samoa Joe, Wardlow, Miro, Swerve Strickland. There's 10 right there. From there, you can maybe do Kingston and Takeshita as just like two other matches. And I think if it's at that level, I think people are going to be excited about it. What's going to really weaken the tournament right out of the gate is if half of those names aren't in it. But instead, let's say we see, or maybe Jericho should be in there too. You know, I'm like, Jericho can switch spots with someone. Maybe Pac is ready. Sammy Guevara is healthy. But if you have Ethan Page and Brian Cage, who, you know, loses a lot and isn't protected, and Lance Archer, who loses a lot and isn't protected, and Preston Vance, I mean, people are going to just sort of go, okay, this isn't a really strong tournament. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's any, like, super obvious names I left off. But, I mean, like, Ricky Starks is in the tag division right now. Aleister Black and FTR, they're in the tag division. There's some people you can say aren't in it because they're in the tag division. But, man, I think they can load this up. And, again, you can put Keith Lee in place of, you know, Miro or something like that, and the tournament doesn't really have a drop-off. But if Tony goes all in on this, no pun intended, with really 12 of the top 16 names, let's put it that way, I think people will be excited to see a round-robin tournament with a bunch of first-time matchups, a lot of first-time matchups. They can't go all meta on us and promise clean finishes, but it wouldn't be a bad thing to leak and simply book that way.
Yeah.
You could also make it storyline and simply say that this is a round-robin tournament with points, but if anyone cheats with a foreign object or outside interference, they lose 2 points. Like, there's a punishment beyond losing the match. Although then it becomes sort of storyline, like, oh, if there's interference, you can also just go, you're ousted from the tournament and you'll be replaced with one of the alternate jurors, so to speak, sitting on the sidelines, who will inherit your points but take your spot. And then basically that just leads to everything being clean, not cop-out finishes with big names getting knocked out.
And it would be easy to just say there's nobody, everybody's banned from ringside in these matches, basically.
Yes,
like,
for
this
sure.
is just one-on-one. Because if it's not interference, it's the distractions that lead to finishes and things like that that have really been overdone lately.
If you come to ringside, you will be suspended for 4 years. I mean, it can be that simple. No, I mean, why? Like, just let's make it. Let's Tony Khan should come out there and go, we're not kidding around. We're not kidding around about this. This is going to be a prestigious, hard fought tournament. And what we want to know is who the best wrestler is, not who has the most sneaky people at ringside, or the best ability to create a distraction to use a foreign object, or a low blow to win. This is going to be fought under the strictest rules you have seen on the national professional wrestling stage in a very long time. And send that message out there. And, you know, just to differentiate it, you know, people would say, why don't you do this all the time? I'll live with that question if it means we get a clean tournament, as opposed to a tournament with a bunch of screwy finishes that people roll their eyes at, and it cheapens, you know, what happens in the ring.
And that's, of course, one of the biggest drawbacks of the G1 each year is the Bullet Club's constant interference and the other groups that really mar an otherwise pristine tournament most years. But also, you know, I think the reason that you have the interference so often in these matches and you have the distraction finishes and things like that is it's sort of a lazy or way to advance storylines, or sort of a booking crutch to advance storylines, where the storyline in this tournament is the wins and losses. I mean, where you are, your pecking order within the standings week to week, based on what happens in your match, based on what happens in the other matches, that is the storyline. So you don't even really need interference to advance a story when the story is winning and losing the matches and what your record is and where you are in the tournament.
Good points. Okay, let's pause here. Let's formally introduce ourselves and then move on to more conversation about this with callers and emailers and other topics from this episode of Collision. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, November 11th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of a bunch of podcasts throughout the week, including some VIP exclusive ones, which you can find out about at pwtorch.com/govip. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday night, live after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, about 5 minutes after the show's end. We are live at wadekellerpostshow.com. You can find a direct link to the show stream at pwtorch.com at the top and bottom of my TV reports, because I also do a live write-up of Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision each week. You can also find the phone number and email address in those TV report articles on our website. We invite you to call us if you're live streaming our show right now, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that flags you on the switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you can call that number, just listen in if it's easier for you to do that than streaming it. You can also email us during the show or afterwards at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We'd love to hear from you, even if you can't listen to our show live afterwards and you just download it later on, but you do watch the shows live. That's your way to be part of the show and contribute questions, reactions, and topics. The other voice you hear on the show so far is Greg Parks, a longtime Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist, host of Wrestling Night in America, often after live pay-per-views and PLEs. And Greg, it is great to be with you here on the Collision Post Show. We don't get to do shows together too often, but it's usually the flagship, but I appreciate you making time on a Saturday night to join me here.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Wade.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's just start rolling through calls and emails and see where they lead us. And we're going to begin with Jordan in Kentucky. Jordan, thanks for calling. What is on your mind tonight about Collision?
What do you think Copeland looked like? I really thought he looked well. Like the way he was moving around tonight.
Yes. Greg, what do you think about Copeland tonight? It seemed to me it was, and maybe that's what Jordan's getting at, Copeland going, hey, he's got to be cognizant of the fact that it hasn't been a great start in terms of viewership numbers and in-ring performances. Not that it's been awful and people have been commenting about him being awful, but he did seem more fired up and more motivated and trying to get in a little bit more of showcase moments in the match tonight. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought he looked good. I didn't have a problem with anything that he did out there or how he looked or anything like that. His age, and I think AEW, based on how they presented him so far, They're certainly not going to put him in the ring every week, which is smart. They may have him on TV every week, which is fine. As you said, Wade, he hasn't necessarily been the draw that maybe both Tony Khan and he thought he would be at this stage. But, you know, he's a guy who is still valuable at the top of the card and on Collision. You know, Collision doesn't really have that leader now that CM Punk is gone. Maybe they don't need someone like that now that the rosters are not going to be as separate as they were under Punk. But I could see Copeland being a guy who steps into that leadership void on Collision should he choose to be booked on that show maybe more often than Dynamite. But, yeah, I thought he looked good tonight. I thought he moved around well. As long as they sort of limit his in-ring work, I think he will continue to look good. I thought that match, the main event, was really one of the highlights. I mean, Collision tonight, to be honest, was a lot of squashes and extended squashes. I mean, it was a name wrestler versus much less of a name wrestler. And so maybe it was by virtue of that that when the main event came around, it felt like a marquee matchup, you know, even though it was the Righteous, who are mostly ROH guys. I do like the pairing of them with Jake Roberts and Lance Archer, I think. And I haven't loved the presentation of them so far, moving from ROH to AEW, but I think it's an interesting mix with them with Jake Roberts. I thought that was well done all around tonight.
All right. Back to you, Jordan. Any follow-up or any other topic?
No, I thought the main event was definitely the highlight of the show. I listened to you guys talk about the 12-man round robin. I love that idea. I love the idea of no false finishes, no interference or things like that. Because, you know, too much, it just kind of lessens the win of the character. You know, it just doesn't really advance the character. It's just kind of a throw in, and you know, the guns, you know, or Juice Robinson interfering with Jay White's matches, and so I love the idea of putting the biggest names in that, and then maybe Kingston for popularity. That's a fabulous idea. People will get pumped for that. Yeah, and that's something that I would definitely look forward to.
A couple names I left off when I was just kind of trying to come up with 12. But I said, you know, pick 12 out of the top 16. Kyle Fletcher, I'd love to see in the tournament because, one, you could tell the story of him really coming into his own and putting in one great performance after another. It could be a way to further establish him as this rising star on the roster. Jay White also, especially if he doesn't beat MJF. I don't think the world champion should be in the tournament, but, I mean, they could do that. MJF or Jay White or whomever could be in it. If Jay White comes up short, I mean, this would be a good way to elevate him also. So just throwing a couple of their names out there. I'm sure there's a couple
others. Did they say what the winner of the tournament was going to get?
No. I assume a trophy or something. Jordan, did they say? I'm trying to recall if they mentioned, like, the prize.
I did not recall. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be one of those things that determines who some of those last couple slots are too. You know, if it's a trophy, that's one thing. But if it's a, you know, title match against the champion at some point, that's something a little different.
Yeah, I think Tony would have said, I think he would have said if there was a title shot. I would hope he would have said that, and I'm pretty sure he didn't. He just said the winner will be crowned at Worlds and on December 30th.
Okay.
Yeah. Jordan, is there any – Jordan, I want to ask you real quick, because you sound excited about the tournament. I listed a bunch of names. Is there somebody you'd like to see in the tournament who isn't necessarily a top 16 wrestler in the company, but like kind of a Kyle Fletcher type where, oh, I'd like to see them get showcased in this circumstance?
Well, you mentioned Penta. I really like Penta. You mentioned Pac. I really would like to see him come back, but he's still maybe hurt. But he is someone that I miss seeing. He's hurt, he's injured often, and you know, too often. And I don't know, maybe a Sammy Guevara, maybe someone like that. You know, he's a high flyer though. He's not one of the power yet, so he may not quite fit in that tournament. And I can't really think of any.
Yeah.
The names you mentioned were really the top names. But maybe instead of a Kingston, maybe a Sammy. But they don't highlight Sammy too much, you know. He does wrestle a whole lot.
Yeah.
But they've obviously, now they're going to have Sting obviously protecting him and doing tag matches. But do you guys see him doing tag matches in, you know, every pay-per-view until he retires, or is this going to be are they just going to occasionally have him? Or because tonight kind of surprised me that he was out there. They may have announced it last week, but I missed that.
Yeah, Greg, what do you think about how Sting looked tonight and what Jordan's bringing up in terms of sort of protecting him, not hiding him, but at least, what's the word, balancing what's expected of him in matches leading up to his retirement match and in perhaps saving his retirement match as a singles match, but doing tag matches until then? Kind of speak to that topic.
I think the way that AEW has presented Sting throughout his run has been the one thing that they've gotten 100% correct. He's wrestled in tag matches, I think, for his age and the wear and tear that he has. I think that's smart. I think putting him with Darby Allin and the relationship that we've seen grow with Sting and Darby Allin over time has been really awesome. And I think this is a really cool cap to Sting's career, where he comes in, he wrestles every once in a while, he is this on-screen mentor for someone like Darby Allin, who, you know, his character needs a mentor, and Sting can kind of relate to some of the things that Darby Allin is going through. And then, you know, Sting is treated, even for as much as he is on TV, all of his appearances are treated like a big deal. And, you know, you have Tony Schiavone on commentary, it's Sting every time, you know, so that helps too. But I think it'll probably be tag matches until the retirement match. I think that should be his spotlight. And so I hope that's the case. But I just think AEW's presentation of Sting is the textbook way that professional wrestling organizations should present legends of that stature, of that age, and of that experience, where you're getting a lot out of him, but you're also not asking him to do a ton because he's not wrestling every week. When he is wrestling, he's wrestling in tag matches. Although sometimes in these tag matches, he is doing some wild and crazy things that you may never have thought that you would see Sting do. But I guess he thinks, hey, I'm on the downside of my career. I'm in the last year of my career. I'm just going to throw everything out there that I can. I've just been really pleased with how Tony Khan has treated Sting as a legend in this business.
I thought there was a little stretch of time with Sting where he just kind of come out with Darby and it wasn't a big enough deal. It was sort of like, oh, Sting's here with Darby or that kind of thing. And I think they've certainly, I don't know if corrected course is the word, but they seem cognizant of the fact that when he does appear, you want it to seem like a big deal. There was a stretch of time, like, I don't know what era it was, Greg, you were covering SmackDown then, when Undertaker just started wrestling every week on SmackDown. And we're like, what? Yeah. Like, this should be a bigger deal. What's going on here? Is he trying to, you know, get enough matches in to hit some bonus or something? and it watered down a little bit what it meant for an Undertaker match at that stage of his career. And that was, you know, years before he retired, but he was still a big enough deal that it felt like it should be a bigger situation. So, but yeah, they've moved in the right direction and Sting should not be wrestling every week on TV, but this felt like a match put together because Tony is aware that Collision's viewership is suffering right now. It's not doing well against all the competition that's out there. They knew it'd be tough, but you know, this is very much on the low end of what I think where they thought they would be. And it's a result of losing CM Punk and some other factors that we've chronicled, I think, you know, over the months here that Collision's been on the air. So having Sting appear and Copeland team together is good. I think they could have done more during this show to frame this as a really big deal, that especially that Copeland and Sting would be in the ring together, and do more to build up the threat of the opponents and sacrifice a few minutes on a couple of the matches and really treat this as like, this Collision is a big deal, a special deal on the level of MJF against Kenny Omega, or FTR against Cole and MJF. Like really, really make this seem like this main event is history in the make, is history that's about to happen. And so I can visualize ways to do that. We've seen it done with many different promotions over the years. Just go back to Dusty Rhodes when he would appear on TV and how he would have his own announcers talk about his appearance. It was incessant until he appeared. But if you do it with the right tone, I think it can work and make things seem even like a bigger deal. But, you know, not giving him a failing grade tonight.
Right.
Jordan, anything else for us?
Yeah, I got one more question. Bryan Danielson. Now, MJF, you know, of course, you've got guys that have lined up. You've had Samoa Joe, Wardlow, I forget the other. But anyway, they say they're coming after his belt. Eventually, Bryan Danielson is fantastic wrestler, okay? Could you see a way for them to put him in a title match and him be the one to take the belt off of MJF? Because, I mean, they can put it back on him quick enough if they choose to do that. But do you see, you know, Bryan Danielson kind of going out as the champion somehow?
Jordan, did we lose
some way
him?
Or another?
Oh, there you are. Good. You dropped off briefly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in a hospital here. But do you see them taking the belt off of MJF, putting it on Danielson, knowing that they could put it back on MJF quick enough? And, you know, in some shape or fashion, you see them pushing Danielson, you know, as a send-off like that.
Yeah, Greg, we caught most of that. What do you think about the direction of the world title? And I'd like to see Danielson be in the history books as an AEW champion in 2024 at some point.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would argue against it. I just don't know if that's something that's on Bryan Danielson's bucket list. And with it being the last year of his career, I think Tony Khan is probably going to kind of go with what Bryan Danielson wants. If Bryan Danielson wants to face somebody, Tony Khan's going to try to make it happen. And Danielson has never been a guy, I don't think, who's needed the titles. And so in the last year, I think it would be cool as a fan of his to see it. I'm not really confident that it happens. I think Danielson has kind of maybe in his own mind said, well, it's the last year of my career. I don't think it would be fair necessarily for me to go after the titles because I'm going to be retiring. So let me do my own thing. Let me have my fun wrestling all this wide range of wrestlers that the AEW roster has available to him. And, you know, that's what matters to him. What matters to him is the challenge and wrestling guys like Zack Sabre Jr. and wrestling the up-and-coming young guys. I think that's going to matter more to him than winning a title in the last year of his career. And so I think Tony Khan has kind of deferred to what Danielson wants here in the twilight of his career.
Be an interesting poll question, how people feel about having Danielson have a run at the belt. He could actually, his last match could be for the world title at All In, at Wembley, and, you know, win or lose, he retires. He either retires as champion, so just, you know, retires from full-time competition, and maybe forever, you know, and have that be kind of a big moment where he either wins or just comes up short. I mean, you could do that. Jordan, anything else for us?
No, that's good, guys. I appreciate your time, and I'll let you move on with your show.
Great, thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay,
very good. Yeah, appreciate. Always good to hear from you, Jordan. All right, let's go next to Let's see. Area code 916. 916, go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Robbie from Antioch, California.
Hey, Robbie, thanks for calling. What's your mind about collision tonight?
I actually just wanted to call in real quick because I was at the taping from last night and kind of give first perspective of what I observed.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, we should note that the Rampage was either live or aired on flight delay last night. I'm not sure which it was because they didn't make a big deal out of it being live last night when I watched the first half of the show. Haven't gotten to the FTR main event yet, but I've heard good things, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, tonight was pre-taped, so the event took place last night. So good. I'm glad you called up, Robbie. First of all, how full was the building? It looked from WrestleTix like they had a pretty good crowd.
Oh, did it now? Because, I've been in that game I've been in that arena for Warriors games, and I want to say you could probably fit somewhere around, like, in the 15,000 range if you were to open up the upper deck. And we had none of the upper deck open on either side, and I actually sat three rows behind the ring on the hard cam side, and there was nobody behind me at all in any of the 100 sections, and one of the 100 sections, probably off to my right, was about half full. So everything in the lower bowl on the that was in range of the camera probably made it appear like it had a lot of people, but there might have been 4,500 people at tops.
Yeah, you're really actually close according to WrestleTix's estimation because they a little bit lower than I thought I remembered seeing. Ended up around 42. They have it at 4,274 for tickets distributed, but it was the second largest walk-up in the company's history. Not sure what led to that. It looks like it's very much an average crowd for Collision so far, based on the WrestleTix graph that they put up. But that's skewed by for the first 6 weeks doing 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, and 9,000. If you take that away, it was actually a little bit above average since then, kind of since
I was going to say from what I remember, anything over 4,000 at this point that AEW is drawing is a pretty good crowd. So,
yeah, I'm actually looking at WrestleTix chart. They did a really good job with the graphics here, and they did 4,400 in Seattle about 6 weeks ago. That was the last time that they topped 4,100, and then they were at nearly 4,500 in Chicago a couple months back, and a couple of weeks before that in Greensboro, they're at 5,400. Most of the crowds have a three in front of them the last few months, not a four. So it is on the better end, Robbie, of for Collision, but in that venue, like you said, you can put a lot more in there. And obviously, if they had better advance, they would have set it up. In a way where more people would have been opposite the camera, invisible.
Well, there was
Who got the biggest go ahead, Robbie. Yep. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say there was also, like, I was following WrestleTix pretty closely. There was a lot of issues with ticket purchase. They had a buy one, get one deal on tickets that they never released the code to access it, like, via WrestleTix. So that I know that people were, like, questioning on that Twitter post or whatever, trying to find what it was. And I mean, to be honest with you, kind of to roll into another topic, they didn't promote really anything for this event. I mean, I went to Revolution out there or in San Francisco earlier in the year, and there was hype on the radio, and there was hype, about all of the great matches that they were going to have. And I took my wife to both events, and this event in particular, I understand that it's a Collision and that it's a Rampage taping, but, you know, besides seeing Sting, and seeing, I guess you could say FDR, there wasn't a lot of people on the card that my wife was familiar with, and she's kind of my gauge on if something's catching or not catching. So, you know, there was no MJF, there wasn't a lot, there really was, you know, there was no Young Bucks, there was no Kenny Omega, they really didn't seem like they put a lot of effort into appealing to the Bay Area crowd, more or less. So,
yeah.
That was kind of like seeing the building the way it was. I understand that like Collision gets the attendance that it does, but it kind of feels like they really could have got a lot more out of the show if they promoted it a little more and gave us a little more as a crowd.
Interesting. Yeah. That was going to be my next question, so I'm glad you rolled right into that, because I think it's so important for drawing return crowds and creating a positive buzz. And I think utilizing, and I know it's tough with two shows a week and not all the top guys want to be flying out both on Wednesday and Saturday. It really can occupy way too much of their life, you know, traveling to and from shows with such a short number of days off. But that said, if there were more stars doing non-televised dark matches like WWE does, or they had, like, you know, Cody last night at SmackDown work a dark match afterwards, that's going to get the crowd more satisfied. And like you said, your wife is a good test for that in terms of, you know, does this feel like a big-time show with big names? Greg, do you have a question for Robbie?
Yeah, Robbie, thanks for calling in. I'm curious, how long did the collision portion of the taping last, and once, you know, how did the crowd thin out as the show went on? Because I know sometimes when they do double tapings, people will leave after the first taping, but Rampage only being an hour long, probably not a lot of people leaving after that. So was the crowd, by the time Collision ended, was it about the same as when the taping started? And about how long did the Collision taping take?
They rolled right into the Collision taping, and I mean, just enough time for us to go and get a adult soda, basically. That was, and they rolled right in, and there was no, I wouldn't say there was any drop at all in attendance. Like, everybody who was there for both the shows and stayed pretty much up until, the only time I saw people filing out is when they had the dark match with Cesaro after the Collision taping.
Mm. Okay.
So, Robbie, talk about who got the biggest crowd reactions of the night, and if any of them surprised you. And same thing on the flip side, if there was any reactions that were less than you expected.
I would say the biggest reaction of the night was probably the FTR tag match out of everything. Maybe not from the jump when they walked out, but they really got the crowd. There was a moment where I can't remember who it was exactly, but took a nasty dive into the announce table. And that really kind of brought the crowd to like a dead silence. And people thought that he was really hurt. But the fact that they kept the match going and that was by far probably the best reaction out of the night. Second to that would have been the Sting, Darby, and Edge match. That one got a great reaction with the crowd as well. The one that surprised me out of all of them was the Andrade match. The Andrade match was over really, really big in the arena. They had the crowd for most of it.
And with that match, were people into the action, or did they clearly see Andrade as the babyface? Because Daniel Garcia has been, you know, he's coming out with Menard and Parker, but he's been saying, I'm a pro wrestler. He's been getting a little more serious, but then he's doing his dance thing. When I was watching that match tonight, I mean, it was 16 minutes of the crowd, you know, cheering the action and seeming into it, and even what I thought was a bit of a generous, this is awesome chant at one point. I mean, it was a good match, but a little generous. I know crowds like to just do that, but I was watching that going, this is an AEW type of reaction. They're cheering moves and spots, but I didn't feel that there was like an emotional investment in the outcome, or really a strong affinity for one or the other, as much as, like I say, just sort of being into the action. But what was it like in the building for that, since you specifically brought up that match having a good crowd energy?
I think a lot of that might have to do with the Latin American, I guess you would say, crowds that was there. They were very big for the Luchadors. They were very big for Andrade, and they were very big for Commander and his partner. It kind of changed the dynamic of maybe whatever they were going for. And because all of the Spanish wrestlers really had the support of the crowd, huge. I mean, there was Mexico chants in the crowd. There was a lot of that going on through the entire show. So that might have led to, I don't know how it came off on TV, but that could have led to it maybe being a little skewed.
Greg, what did you think of the crowd reaction in that match and how AEW framed Andrade and Garcia, considering Garcia has been seeming to kind of lean maybe more towards getting more serious again, despite the dancing teases, which he can't resist because the crowds are into it. But I think it's terrible for his career unless his goal is to be a lower card novelty act who people laugh at and imitate, but sort of in a mocking, playful mocking way. I don't know. And then Andrade with his character, you know, linked up with CJ, but who are we rooting for against CJ to succeed against Miro? Like, that isn't even
clear. Yeah, I'm surprised at how weak this angle with CJ Perry has been since she debuted. I know a lot of people were expecting her, were wanting her. There was hints seemingly weekly from Miro in his interviews that she was going to be a character on television at some point. And when she finally made her long-awaited debut, and you know we see the first story she's involved in, it's not as hot of a story as I had expected. I thought the crowd was really good for this, and that was something I noticed watching this match. So it kind of, you know, backs up, you know, what Robbie's talking about as far as the crowd interested in this match. You know, I think Daniel Garcia, the story they're telling about him coming so close, you know, he fought MJF on TV, came up on the losing end. I thought maybe they'd give him the win here to kind of move him in a different direction with this storyline, but he loses now to Andrade. So the losses are really starting to build. You can see the stress that this is taking on Daniel Garcia as a character, the constant losses. Although, as you noted, he did take time to dance in front of CJ Perry. So I think that was more than anything else what people wanted to see, for better or worse, for Daniel Garcia in the long run. They wanted to see him shake his hips in front of CJ Perry just to see her reaction. So we got that tonight. But I'm interested in the follow-up with Daniel Garcia, because I think while, yes, he's doing this silly dancing bit, I do think the other story that they're telling with the constant losses and how that's really gnawing at him is more interesting at this point than what they're doing with CJ Perry, than what they're doing with Andrade, and what they're doing with Miro.
The CJ Perry character has been hard to get a, like, figure out at this point. Because, I mean, she's all over the place. She's, like, giggling. She's acting like a sort of a damsel in distress in some kind of old school way. And at other times, she's trying to be Alexander York, the what was her nickname? The woman of the future, when she had the gaudy computer thing. And
WCW, of course.
Yeah, back early 90s with the Alexander York and her Terrence Taylor and Robert Morton. And it was like, and she would, you know, pretend to type into this laptop and get answers on what moves wrestler should do next. So there's a little bit of this sort of like buttoned up, serious executive manager. And then she's also like this giggly thing. And then when Garcia danced in front of her, she like, he turned around and then she did the dance. And then she got kind of pouty faced. And I was like, was she mad Garcia didn't see her, or was she mocking him behind his back? I just haven't been impressed with her kind of picking a lane and establishing mm-hmm. how we're supposed to feel about her yet. And I still don't know if we're rooting for her or against her. I kind of think her character is a bit of a mess right now. You know, it feels like a one note thing to say hot and flexible. And she comes out and does. I don't really think she has a sense of what her character is.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me, especially with the Miro stuff. There's a lot of mixed messages there with those characters and things that are left unsaid. And I think it's just confusing to the viewer more than anything else.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Robbie, back to you here. Was there anything off camera? We always like to know about Tony Khan's speeches or anything along those lines that is worth passing along.
Yeah, he was hyped up. He came out before the show, and honestly, I don't want to sound like an AEW basher because it's my number one show, and I really, really root for it. But I looked over at my wife and said, "Man," and her response was, "Man, that guy is a huge nerd, isn't he?" And I didn't really know, like, and she almost felt bad. She's like, "I could tell he's socially awkward, so I feel bad even saying that." And it's just, I don't know. It was really, if I could just say this, I don't know what they're doing, AEW. Like I said, I strongly, strongly root for them. But I've called in for a couple events that I've gone to, and I can say the exact same thing. Like, the merch stands were terrible. my wife wanted to buy a shirt. She fully intended to go and buy some merch. And once again, there was like five shirts that nobody in the entire arena was going to wear. The crowd itself, I mean, hey,
so
for
weird.
Me, I would go to an AEW show if there was 500 people there. But I paid $132 to sit three rows back from center of the ring on the hard cam side, right behind Dave Meltzer, and got the fist bump Tony Schiavone as he was walking by doing his announcements and stuff. So, honestly, I had the time of my life. I mean, it was a great show. Like, start to finish, live wrestling show, it was fantastic. But as far as, like, a major league, this is our second and third show that we're putting on every single week. What did we see? Like, if SmackDown and Raw, that's the one and two on WWE, man, the two and three on AEW is sure as hell not giving us what I think we deserve. I really think that, like, they would have had a much better turnout had they given us something to show for. And it's not a knock on anybody who was there. It was, like I said, it was a really, really great show. It just, man, I really, really want them to succeed. I want them to come back. I want to see them again. But, man, I mean, counting on the best, you know, best supposed walk-up or whatever that they've had, I mean, that was the same story with Revolution. I mean, they sold like 1,000 tickets like the day of, but it was looking like, man, they're hardly going to fill the Chase Center. So I just really hope whatever they need to do to tighten it up and get people more invested, they decide to do that, because it would be a shame to see something that's like got so much potential and has put on such a great show. Because, like, start to finish, it's fantastic. But, man, if you can't get more than 4,000 people on a Friday night to come and watch a great show, then something's wrong.
Yeah. Well, part of it, and it's why I say with a straight face, Cancel Collision, Cancel Rampage, put all your resources into making Dynamite the best must-see show you can, leave people wanting more, and you'll sell more pay-per-views, you'll get less TV money in the short run, but you'll be perceived as a hot company that's putting on the best TV show with the most star depth, and you'll have bigger crowds because you're going to cities less often, and you're just packing the shows with all your stars, either televising the matches or having them be dark matches afterwards. And because obviously, because there are a lot, I mean, how many big-name wrestlers can you rattle off right now, Robbie, who you did not see live last night, who are branded as, you know, AEW top stars?
I mean, that's the point, right? I would say most of them. I mean, everybody that's on Dynamite or on a pay-per-view is not there. And I can tell you specifically, I went to Revolution with five people, and I only went with my wife this time. And the only reason that I didn't go or the other people didn't buy tickets was because there wasn't anybody there that they wanted to see. And again, for what we paid, for what we got, I mean, you could have day of basically be sitting next to the ring for under $200, which for me is unheard of. I've never sat that close. So kind of a testament to like where they are right now. And I just really hope they can stop focusing so much on expanding and going to places more often, like you're saying, and putting out more content and everything else and focusing on what they've got that everybody is interested in. You know, we want to see this MJF story. We want to see the Jay White. There's a lot of things that we want to see, and it's surrounded by a lot of stuff that seems like they might have an idea or might be trying, but it just tailors off and it goes to nothing. And then you end up with nothing when we go to these shows.
There's just, it's too much of a lottery in terms of knowing who you're going to see when you buy a ticket. I mean, you're not seeing Moxley or MJF or Danielson in person, or the Young Bucks or Kenny Omega, or even, you know, Takeshita, Eddie Kingston, Miro in person. There's like all these like names who just aren't on a show. And if you're an AEW fan, buying tickets on spec and maybe seeing one of your five favorites, like, or maybe four of your five favorites, you don't know when you buy a ticket. And I don't think that's a great formula. I don't think their roster is deep enough. And to do that at this point, I know in Tony's mind, he's thinking, well, we're giving you Edge and Sting teaming up with Darby, and you're seeing this FTR classic, and, you know, hey, there's Andrade and Rush and Dralistico they're going to give you great action. And he thinks in those terms, but I don't know if he, and maybe he does, and he laments the lack of ability to have everybody on every show. Maybe he's very cognizant of it and he's just doesn't want to like hone up to it or acknowledge it publicly. But I mean, obviously AEW would be selling more tickets if every show you're seeing almost all, you know, 9 out of the top 12 stars every time. But you're seeing 4 or 5 out of the top 12 stars, if you're lucky, at a random Dynamite or Collision. Cause, you know,
and I think I do think it's important to remember at this point, too, that the whole idea around Dynamite and adding another show was CM Punk. I mean, that is the reason that Collision exists, is CM Punk needed to have a show of his own, and he was going to have the people that were Punk-friendly on that show, and it was going to have a different feel, and Punk was going to have some sort of creative control over the show and in the locker room and things like that. And once Punk left, there left the probably second biggest reason that Collision existed, the first biggest being additional rights fees that AEW was able to procure for the show. And I feel like it just kind of left Tony Khan scrambling a bit, that now he had this second show that he had to try to make different than the first show, but also try to make as good as, with as much star power, when you have a lot of the guys who probably when Collision started were under the impression that they would not wrestle on Saturday nights. And now with Punk gone and that star power void that Collision left, you have to go back to those guys and say, hey, remember when you didn't have to work Saturdays? Now we might need you to work Saturdays. And what's their reaction going to be? Maybe once a month, you know? So I think a lot of the problems that we're talking about here stems from the lack of CM Punk. And I'm not saying the solution is to respect CM Punk. I'm not saying he's blameless and they should have kept him. But when you build a show around a volatile person like CM Punk and they end up blowing up in your face, this is kind of the mess that you're left with.
Robbie, what was the crowd reaction? I assume you saw the video with Danielson and Tony Khan announcing the Continental Classic Round Robin G1 style tournament. Was the crowd like ooing and aahing and cheering, or were they not paying attention? How did that go in the building?
That was definitely a bathroom break for most people. Like, we had kind of, the show kind of went in a rhythm, you know, they would have a match and go to commercial, the lights would kind of dim, and people knew at that point that it was either going to be an in-house promo or something like that. But to be honest with you, that kind of, for me at least, led to me being a little bit more disappointed, because I'm seeing Jericho, I'm seeing Danielson, I'm seeing all these people that are here because they're, you know, they're backstage, but they're not there. They never came out for the show. You know, there wasn't, the quote unquote stars or whatever, they're there to cut a promo, but they're not there in the arena, and none of us got to see them. So it kind of,
and even last week, like the Jericho Kenny Buck segment was pre-taped, I think, at Dynamite that aired on Collision on Saturday. They weren't even in the building.
Yeah. And that's what I would assume. What I would assume for this as well. So, me personally, yeah, I did not hear it until I actually saw it on a, I actually saw it on Instagram about 30 minutes before I called in. That was because we didn't hear it in the building because we were all getting refreshments. So that to Greg's point earlier, as far as like the CM Punk thing and stuff like that, one thing that like really, really kind of rubbed me, or not rubbed me the wrong way, but was like, you have a guy in Powerhouse Hobbs. He's from the area. He's from literally right down the road. They did nothing at all with him locally or anything like that leading up to this. They don't do anything in the arena for him beforehand. And then you wait until the very last match to have a promo where he chicken shit. He backs off to a sitting big show with his leg wrapped with every piece of medical tape in the building. Like, it doesn't, I don't understand what we're doing. Like, it just, he could be so much more, and he was probably, besides Andrade and besides FTR in the Edge match, he was probably the person that was the most over in the building because he's local. So it's just, even the layups they're missing right now, in my opinion. And so that's kind of what, and again, had a great time, all those things. But once I left the show and had time to process it, it was like, what is going on? What are we doing?
How did the crowd react to the Willow Nightingale Julia Hart match? Did it feel like it was at the level of some of the other matches, or was there a drop off for the women's match?
There was a bit of a drop off from the earlier Ruby Soho match. It's not that the crowd wasn't into it. It's just that Julia Hart just really doesn't, lay it in. the way some of the other people were during the night. So when, you know, when she would go after Willow, it was kind of like, are we really, we're really believing this right now? So that was, I don't know. It was a little, it was a big ask, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Yeah. Greg, do you want to jump in with another question?
Yeah. Curious is the response that Roddy Strong got. He wrestled a match tonight and doing his whole neck health bit. I know there was a chant for that as well during the match. But this is one of those kind of polarizing storylines that AEW fans either love because it's entertaining. It's a great use of Roddy Strong. He's probably as over and as entertaining as he's been in a long time from a character standpoint. But it's also one of the things that people point to say AEW is doing too much comedy, especially at the top of the card. MJF as your world champion should not be involved in this kind of comedy. So what was the fan reaction to Roderick Strong? How over was that character and that that storyline?
All right, it's definitely not my thing whatsoever, but I will say that there was a guy in the crowd who was dressed exactly like him and had the neck brace and everything, and had Adam Chance going on basically the entire show. So by the time that Roderick Strong came out, the crowd was really ready for it. When they see him rip, I mean, it went over pretty big. It's not my thing. I don't think that it's going to make anybody watch anything more by hearing him yell, you know, across the arena or anything. But it went over pretty well.
Greg, that was going to be my final question for us. So good job. Robbie, anything else you want to relay in terms of crowd chants, buzz outside the building, things that happened off air, anything else that you can share with us about your experience last night?
Not much more than I've already said, besides the fact that, again, it's a really, really great in-person show. Anybody who hasn't gone to a Collision, Dynamite, anything like that, I've had a great time at all of mine. I just really, you know, I hope that they can pull it together so we can start seeing some better cards, maybe a little bit more spread out throughout the year, but with a lot better attendance. Because, you know, all the performers that were there, it was fantastic. From start to finish, they all put in a great effort. We didn't see a bad match. We had a great time. So I hope for their sake they really get it together.
Robbie, thanks so much for calling us and letting us know about your experience last night.
Anytime. Have a great night, guys.
Cool. Yep, you too. Enjoy your weekend. All right. Our number, if you want to join us, 347-215-8558. The phone lines are still open for the few more minutes. We'll be on the air here, 347-215-8558, when you call push 1, as Joe in New York did. Joe, welcome back. What's in your mind about Collision tonight?
Yes, I thought it would. You know, like AEW likes to title their shows, this one could have been called the Go to Sleep Edition of Collision, because it was just bad. I mean, it was kind of a good main event, but you had nothing really there to get you to the main event. I mean, where were your stars? You were a week away from a pay-per-view, and you don't feel that way watching the show. And going with this, okay, it's a good idea, but that was my first question, is what does the winner get? If you're not getting a title match, then the tournament really doesn't mean anything. Who wants it?
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think if they differentiate the tournament enough, I mean, obviously they do too many tournaments of battle royals and there's too many titles. There's a lot of things working against it. But for the crowd they're going for what they're going for here, it's to get people excited about a G1-style tournament loaded with big stars, I hope, I assume, and a format that, you know, Tony Khan, we're going to find out how much the dream match format with a point system for a tournament leading to a winner being crowned on a pay-per-view, how much that is truly a TV ratings draw, or is it just another match on TV, especially if it's not as loaded with top stars as I think it should be to establish it. Does it end? I mean, because Joe's attitude is, hey, you know, what are they fighting for? You know, you're the Continental Classic champion. I mean, if people shrug their shoulders, this might not draw. Greg, do you think this is going to be a draw, or is this, again, catering to a bit of an echo chamber bubble that maybe Tony Khan lives in with social media and podcasts and newsletters and kind of where he came up And what was, you know, the big influence for him in terms of where he spent his time reading and interacting about wrestling growing up?
Yeah, I do think the what the winner gets matters. You know, if you want to compare this to the G1 tournament, the G1 winner always gets a shot at the champion, usually at their biggest show of the year in January. And, I mean, that's a major prize. And if you're going to do a tournament in AEW and you're going to want to make it like the G1, but somebody just gets a trophy, I mean, that pales in comparison to what the winner gets at the G1. And, you know, I kind of earlier in the show talked about the Owen Hart Cup, where, you know, you forget about the winner the next day almost. They don't do a lot to follow up on that. And the winner gets a trophy in that one. So I guess my fear is, and you throw out sort of, you know, the winner getting a trophy is, okay, so what's going to happen the next week? You know, what's going to happen when they get the trophy and they hold the trophy and they take pictures, and then what happens next week? That's going to be the important thing, because you can't treat it like the Owen Cup, where it's never mentioned until that tournament comes up the next year. So my fear is that, you know, they don't have something as prestigious to award the winner to make it commensurate with the time that they're going to invest in this tournament, because this is going to be a lengthy tournament. This is going to take up a lot of TV time. And so you would like the prize to be something worthy of that investment, not only in television time, but also from the fans who are watching at home, the investment that they get in watching the tournament and tuning in each week for it.
Joe, back to you.
Yeah. And did you hear Bryan Danielson expose the business? Basically just saying the booking of Tony Khan, I mean, don't say that on the TV show. I know a lot of people know what's going on, but I still don't want the wrestler coming out there and saying it like on live TV, the booking of the owner. I mean, you just don't do that. And they better wake up and realize they're fighting for a
Go ahead. Let me pause you on that, because to me, booker is a term that's more neutral unless you're an insider fan, because what that just says is, he's the matchmaker. He's the booker. He books talent for cities and books the matches. It's not inherent in a more mainstream sense that booker means he also decides who wins and loses. So, and I think people know Tony is the guy in charge because, yeah, every match that's made, you know, the announcers go, oh, Tony Khan just told me this match is being made. So to me, if somebody like watched wrestling and thought it was real and like saying Tony books the matches, to me, that's just he says who faces who when. But anyway, I want to just kind of jump in with that.
No, that's true. I'm glad you said that, because it's true. Now that you said it like that, I see what you're saying. It is true. But they really need to wake up and realize that they're fighting for a TV contract, because they could get boxed out with the way WWE is spreading out their shows. So, I mean, this idea that wrestlers can't work twice a week, what's going on here? We went from working 7 days a week to you can't get a guy to show up twice a week. I mean, really, I understand people want time with their families, but come on. I mean, you got to, when the TV shows are the most important thing. That's where the money comes from. And you got to have your top guys working both shows. I don't care if they got to work the weekend or anything. If you don't want to work weekends, get a teaching job, 9 to 5, make $50,000 a year, and you have all the time you want with your family. But you're a professional athlete getting paid millions. Get on the TV, make your money, make your TV, do your job.
Greg, what do you think?
I think there's a way, and I do wonder, too, how much this particular episode of Collision being taped on a Friday had an effect on the star power on the show, because you had a lot of pre-tapes. You had Hangman Page cutting his promo in a pre-tape, Chris Jericho, his interview pre-tape. So if you're watching the show at home, you got some big stars on the show. They just weren't in the arena. So as Robbie pointed out, it was more of a frustration, I think, for the people there live not getting the stars than maybe the people watching on TV would have noticed. And I do wonder if the double taping taking place on a Friday and the taped nature of the show affected the amount of star power that Tony Khan put on the show. But I think there's a way to rotate. You have enough stars like Paige, like Jericho, like Omega, like, you know, to a lesser extent, the Don Callis family, but the Young Bucks and things like that, where, you know, you should be able to, maybe you'll work Wednesday this week, but maybe you'll work Saturday the next week. And maybe once every 3 weeks, you'll work a Dynamite and a Collision in a week. And then you have the next 2 weeks where you only work one. I mean, that's kind of the ideal. But we know that storylines don't always go in the same, you know, when you've got say 10 storylines going on at one time, they're not always going at the same pace. So it's a lot easier to kind of draw that roadmap without taking into account injuries, without taking into account people needing time off here and there, maybe not every week. But, you know, there's a lot of balls in the air that Tony Khan needs to juggle when putting together these shows. And not everyone is going to have the star power. And I haven't gone back and looked and seen, you know, what the star power on Collision has been the last few weeks. Obviously, it was way down this week. But I'm not sure if that was just a speed bump or if that's been more common. But it is a different era. And, you know, you talk about the era of working 7 days a week. I mean, that's over with. I mean, there's no going back to that, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, I guess.
I would say one thing on that. I would like to see Ari Emanuel and WWE set the tone, walk in there and say, listen, we bought this company for X amount of dollars. All new contracts going forward, you're working 36 weeks a year. Or you're not working here. And that means you got 16 weeks off, which means you could spread that out over the year where you're not burning the talent out, but you got to work 36 out of 52. And I don't think that's unreasonable, especially when it's a wrestling show that tours around the country.
Yeah, I just think it's hard to put a date on it, because there are so many things that happen. You're involved in storylines. You're not involved in storylines. You're needed some weeks to cover for injuries. You're not needed some weeks. And Wade, maybe you can jump in on this too. I just think it's too hard to put a date on it. And then you get to some, you know, we saw with WCW where guys would have a certain amount of days built into their contract. And once they reached that day, you know, they were not coming in. And so the last thing you want to do if you're WWE is to set a hard date and then end up having to go over and either pay extra or just not have those guys available.
Yeah. And I mean, there's going to be wrestlers with leverage who are going to, I mean, you're not just offering money to wrestlers, you're offering a lifestyle compared to WWE. And if the reputation is this is a grind, and you're flying out Tuesday or first thing Wednesday and then flying home Thursday, and then you got a full day Friday off, but then you're flying out Saturday to be at Collision, flying back Sunday, and then you get Monday and Tuesday off before traveling again, that's a broken up schedule. But again, if you're smart about it, if you're really plan it out, you know, there can be weeks like that, but then you follow up with some time off. You know, WWE does seem to be doing that more now. Someone like Reigns puts in his time, turns out to be a big star, has the leverage, they want to keep him, they have to offer him a special deal. And yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I was advocating for so long for wrestlers to have better schedules than they had. I don't want to advocate for them going back to the way things were. And I like the idea of saying, hey, you know, everybody's going to get time off, extended time off, you know, to, we can work an angle, an injury angle, or just, you know, work it into the story. You know, this is the last match before he goes on hiatus for 6 weeks. You know, you can even work it in to the storyline, just basically wear it as a badge of honor that these wrestlers get time off. You run the risk of some fans going, well, I like Jon Moxley too much to watch AEW for 6 weeks if he's going to be gone. But it would be healthy for the wrestlers, and, you know, that fan would come back in 6 weeks, presumably. And if you have a deep enough roster, you won't lose too many people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joe, it's a never-ending question. But it is a, you know, when you don't have distinct split rosters, but even with split rosters, WWE sends, you know, Cody over to SmackDown to help draw, make the crowd happier. So, but Cody's, you know, main event guy who wants to put in the work right now and you know, pay extra dues because he's new to the main event scene relative to his last run. So, yeah, I mean, it's, there's a lot of pros and cons to it. Joe, anything else you want to bring up?
Quick question, yes. They got the pay-per-view going next week, do they just cancel Collision? Do they not do a show? Does TNT just let them off? How does that work?
They're having a blended episode of Rampage Collision next Friday night.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it 2 hours next week, do you know, I assume?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was assuming that, but I can't. Not sure.
And do you think maybe it's Tony Khan? Maybe wants to tank these last few weeks because the contract is up at the end of the year. We're in the final 5-6 weeks of the year, and maybe he just figures if the rating goes so low, they won't want us to renew, and then we can just go back to our normal 3 hours or the 2 hours. And is that a possibility?
I mean, it's a possibility, but I don't think putting Sting and Adam Copeland and Darby in a six-man tag match is is, you know, you can say is tanking it.
If they wanted to tank it, they could really tank it, you know, to the point where you wouldn't even have to ask that question.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
you don't want to tick off the
typical show. Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't want to tick off
the I don't think he's tanking it, but
I don't think they have
I think he wants to make TV deal with all the hours of TV.
Yeah. Because if TNT leaves them, or TBS, you know, the Warner, I really don't see where they go. You know, they go to a streaming service, they're going to get their 800,000, but they're not going to get anything else after that. And they really need time. They really need TNT. They need Warner, because I don't think there's another network that's going to jump up there and give them a big offer.
Yeah. No, there's a lot. By next fall, we're going to know the landscape is going to be settled for years to come in a way that's probably quite different than it is right now, and it can be good or bad for AEW or neutral. We'll see.
Don't
Joe,
for them, it's neutral.
Appreciate the call.
No problem. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, Greg, any thoughts on the landscape come next October?
Yeah, it's going to be very different. I think Warner has been a great partner for AEW, aside from not allowing the Briscoes on TV. I think that was not a great decision. But in a lot of other ways, I think AEW fits with Warner, and I think Warner has been a really good partner with AEW in terms of just everything, you know, giving them the time, giving them having the confidence in AEW and Tony Khan to give them a second show, and doing the advertising and the cross promoting that AEW does with Time Warner and things like that. So I think the best thing for AEW is to stay on TNT and TBS, because I think they've cultivated quite a nice symbiotic relationship with those two.
Let's go to Zahn in St. Louis to an email here. Good evening, Wade and Greg. After partnering with Ricky Starks, Big Bill has shown more personality, and I found it intriguing when Ricky remarked that Bill and Lexi are a couple. It was the first time that fact was mentioned on TV. It might be a piece of the story for down the line. Big Bill on commentary tonight, Paul White on commentary tonight. That was kind of fun. Different. No Kevin Kelly, no just Tony Schiavone and Nigel tonight also. What do you think of I was watching Rampage tonight, so I'm trying to not conflate both Collision and Rampage in my head. But what do you think of Big Bill on commentary for the opener tonight with Starks? Oh no, was that Rampage I'm thinking of? Now that I realize it, Bill was on commentary for Rampage last night.
Okay.
Yep. Because
I watched Rampage earlier today too, and so I'm having the same problem.
Yes, the two are blending. So yeah, Big Bill was with Schiavone and Nigel last night on Rampage. Did anything stand out about his commentary? I thought he was good.
I thought he was good too, and he was very comfortable, which I liked, and I do think he has potential with this character and with Ricky Starks. I think they make a very interesting duo together. And I'm glad AEW is spotlighting them as well. We know that they've got a lot of tag teams that they rotate in and out of the spotlight, and I'm glad that that Starks and Big Bill are getting that spotlight right now.
All right. Just as far as Big Bill goes, like 2 years from now, is he someone who, he's a tag wrestler, he's a utility upper mid card, or is there something there that could be built into something more than that?
I think on another roster, you could say that he could be built into something more, but I think there's a certain expectation amongst the AEW fan base of what main event title matches look like in AEW. And Big Bill would be the outlier for what that expectation is. And maybe there's something to be said for cycling in someone new, someone different, someone with a different style, someone with a different physique and height and just wrestling profile than an MJF or a Kenny Omega or a Bryan Danielson or a Jon Moxley or anyone like that. So that may prove to be valuable actually, but it doesn't currently fit in with what we've seen AEW go for and Tony Khan go for at the top of the card and what the expectations are for the in-ring, because the expectations are very high and Big Bill, I think, has gotten better and more comfortable as a wrestler, as his character has evolved and as his character has sharpened, but I'm not sure he's at that point where AEW is going to trust him to be in a pay-per-view main event title match or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure myself either. And so, but he's showing more, but there's still something that feels like it needs to be tweaked to be something you'd want to build around. And mm-hmm. I can't quite put my finger on it. I'm going to say build around, you know, build main event programs around.
Yeah.
Number two, I thought it was funny that it was just Tony and Nigel tonight without Kevin Kelly. The broadcast seems to be more focused on stories and talking about upcoming events. What'd you think of just Tony and Nigel last night and tonight, but with some guest commentators, Greg?
Yeah, I made the point on Twitter during the show that Nigel McGuinness is really good as a heel commentator. And I thought that Tony Schiavone plays a better straight man to Nigel McGuinness's heel commentator than Kevin Kelly did. So I've really enjoyed Nigel and Schiavone, and I think they can even develop more chemistry the more opportunities they have to work just the two of them. But I, you know, and it's, I guess it's in to criticize Kevin Kelly now on most online circles. So I don't want it to come off as that, because I think, I guess I'm not as down on Kevin Kelly as a lot of other people are, but I think, you know, for what Nigel McGuinness brings to the table as a heel commentator, I just think he works better with Tony Schiavone.
Yeah. Well, I would say that I wouldn't say it's the in thing to criticize Kevin Kelly as much as Kevin Kelly keeps putting in performances that draw criticism. Like, it's not like people are just into doing it. Well, I mean, like, I'm not criticizing him this week because he wasn't on, and I think he's been a little bit better. But it's been – I mean, there's, you know, headline stories about, you know, his announcing. And, you know, he talked on AEW Restricted about how I have to tell everybody's story like they're seeing it and hearing it for the first time. And it's like, kind of, but – no, you just need to be aware of what the storyline is so that you can talk about it coherently and in an informed way, and maybe know the names of the finishers of the wrestlers whose matches you're calling. Like, I mean, there's just things he did that were inexcusable out of it. Well, now I'm ripping on him. He didn't even wrestle tonight, or didn't even announce this weekend, and here I am criticizing him. Look at what happens. It is the end thing to do. I mean, he didn't come prepared. He didn't come to impress. He showed up and acted like I'm the announcer of the year, and I'm AEW's lucky to have me. And he just thought he could sit down and coast through it. I mean, I don't think that's in dispute that he didn't come in prepared to announce AEW. And the idea of, like, I mean, he has enough experience. He knows what it's like. He knows the job of an announcer is to tell stories on the air. It's to ask questions to your color commentator. It's to bring the fans along, a whole range of fans. And to me, that sounded lame. What I'm supposed to talk about to everybody, like, it's the first time they've seen the show? It's like, that's not the criticism, Kelly. The criticism was you didn't know the names of finishers and you didn't know the storylines and you talked like this all the time and your inflection was really annoying. I mean, everything in those first weeks was terrible. I'd like to see him take more ownership of that. But if that was his, I don't go too far. If he was self-aware enough to take ownership, he wouldn't have been as bad out of the gate as he was. I'll close there.
That's a great summation.
Yes. I think Tony Schiavone's been good. I think he's better than Kevin Kelly right now. Fits with the product more. He's not, you know, he's not the perfect announcer for the AEW product. I don't think AEW found that person yet. I mean, it'd be, you know, 1998 Jim Ross would be great right now for AEW. So maybe Kevin Kelly will come along, you know, but it didn't seem like Kevin Kelly had been watching AEW and suddenly got plopped in a really important chair to call the action. Number three, Rush is the kind of guy AEW needs right now, a mid-card face who is just naturally cool. Andrew Listico could be a good fit in any tag team or trios spot. Let's see. So Rush is the kind of guy as a mid-card face who's naturally cool. Yeah, I think that's a good framing of him. I wouldn't put him – I'm not as high on him as some others, including Todd Martin, in terms of like, oh, you can make him a world champion. I just – he's a difficult behind the scenes. And two, I just don't like some of his instincts in the ring. I mean, I think they're like, I didn't like him just spitting like at a wrestler. Like they're just little things you do that are just sort of kind of, I don't know. There's a lot of talent. There is a cool edginess to him and he certainly has assets and he certainly, you know, his matches are compelling, but, just character-wise, I don't know. I'm just not sold on making him like a top six guy, but that's not Azan's question. He's just like, he's a naturally cool guy to have in the upper mid-card or a mid-card face, and that's probably right. How do you feel about him, Greg?
Yeah, I'm more on the side of where you stand in terms of I'm not there yet with him being a main eventer. I'm open to the possibility of him being that guy, but I'm not there yet. I thought in terms of cool, and that's kind of what I thought of when I saw the pre-taped soundbite that aired before the show. I thought when he cut his promo, it was like, wow, that was good. That was cool. You know, and AEW needs more of that. They need more of that cool. And I thought he brought that in just that little bit of time that he had at the opening of the show. And so, you know, now it's, okay, how does AEW capitalize on that? Where do they go from here? Do they give him more opportunities like that? And, you know, it is hard when you're in a group the way he is to really have that opportunity to stand out, especially when you're not necessarily – portrayed as the leader as much as maybe you should be. I think he has the potential to be a top guy, but I just need to see more before I say that yet.
And finally, Azan says, by doing their own G1 with 12 guys until World ends, the pay-per-view at the end of the year, AEW requires Tony Khan to make an endgame story for his top 12 stars before the year ends. Yeah, this is a different booking challenge for Tony Khan, going full circle back to our original topic, Greg. This is something new, and I'm curious if he excels at this or if he lets us down, if it feels kind of lazy or if it feels inspired. I don't, you know, there's ways you can tell really good stories with, you know, a round robin G1 style tournament where someone's behind and then they make a comeback. You have upsets. I mean, there's just I hope there's a density of thought that rewards people who really invest in this. How are you feeling? Optimistic about that or otherwise?
I am optimistic. I think this is the kind of challenge that Tony Khan welcomes. You know, I think we all talk about how much of a fan he is and how much of a wrestling nerd he is, and I mean that in the best way. And I think the G1 is something that he's always looked at fondly. And I think he does take it as a challenge to book it as intricately as it is booked every year. And I think he'll put the time and thought into it that's required to make it the kind of tournament that he wants to be, which is, you know, the American version of the G1. So with Tony Khan's personality, I have a lot of confidence that this is going to be booked very well. You know, again, I go back to the end game. My only issue is there's got to be a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that makes everything worth it, that makes the investment worth it. And I hope it's more than just a trophy for the sake of the wrestlers and for the sake of the fans who are investing the time in it. But as far as, you know, whether or not he can map that out and book that out, I don't really have any doubts or any worries about that.
All right, we got an email that went into spam last Wednesday on Dynamite, but it leads to a topic we haven't covered yet tonight, so I'll read it from Jorad from Canada, who said, hi, Wade, I just want to reach out and give some praise to the selling of Red Velvet for Julia Hart tonight. I know she's been out for a while, but from what I remember before her injury, she didn't seem like a great seller before. I really liked the way she made it look like Julia Hart was destroying her during that early part of the match heading into the commercial break, and then throughout the break. Do you have any thoughts on this? So we can kind of tie this into a discussion also about what they did last night and tonight with the women's division. We had the Willow Statlander promo and then Willow versus Julia Hart later in the show. And then last night, Ruby Soho and Red Velvet one-on-one. Talk about Red Velvet and what you think of her as a worker, and did you pick up on that from last Wednesday, and any thoughts on just the last two nights of the women's division? Because like I said, we haven't spent much time talking about it.
Yeah, I wasn't so much a fan of Red Velvet as a toady for Jade Cargill. Didn't really miss her or notice that she was off TV all that much. But I thought, you know, in a couple matches she's had when she's come back, you know, big win over Ruby Riott, I believe, last night on Rampage. You know, I thought she's really showed out well, and I'm happy to see that she's come back and she's really impressed me. with what I've seen. The Ruby Riott, I thought that, excuse me, I thought the match with Red Velvet was interesting, but the finish was just Ruby Riott, like, had to wait so long with her back purposely turned to Red Velvet, waiting for Red Velvet to roll her up after she had been delivered the flowers by, you know, that were eventually, we found out they were sent by Angela Parker. I just thought the blocking of that whole scene during the match was really poorly done and came off as really, really fake. But I liked everything else about it. So the Ruby Riott Angela Parker thing is really funny to me, and the interactions we've seen between Saraya and Matt Menard has also been kind of funny, as they're friends who are like, see that this is not a good thing for each of them to get involved in. And the Julia Hart stuff with Willow Nightingale, I'm a huge fan of Willow, so I love any time that she's on TV. She's extended match here with Julia Hart. I think Julia Hart has really improved. She's done some really nice mic work as well in these pre-tapes with the House of Black. So I give her a lot of credit for that as well, and the whole situation with Sky Blue. I think this is a really interesting storyline with the, you know, the mist and the painting of the eyes, and that's all – I'm intrigued by that, and I think it's utilizing these talents really well. It's not the AEW title, the women's title storyline, but they're giving ample time to a secondary story, which is, I think, one of the biggest complaints that we've had about AEW's booking of the women's division is they just haven't had a focus outside of the women's champion. So the fact that these women are getting this time and this focus, I think, is really cool, and I think they've all really stepped up their game in that spotlight.
Where are you on Chris Statlander? I feel like a parent at a spelling bee watching her promos. Like, don't screw up, get it right, don't screw up, get it right. Like, I'm not rooting against her, but she's just not good. Like, I mean, I'm just going to be, like, blunt about it. I don't know who she is. I don't know what makes her tick. I don't know what's likable or unlikable about her. She kind of screwed up almost like where you could imagine them going, we have to retake it, when she pointed at her belt and said, no one deserves this. Like, and she was like confused about what to call the belt over her shoulder with Willow. And it just took me kind of out of the moment. Her facial expressions are just unclear what she's going for. And they've made her the centerpiece of this. Not well, you know, as the champion walking around. I want her to just sort of see growth and get better. Don't know if she has it in her or if she just needs kind of better coaching and no one's helping her or what, but I mean, this is a big, she's on national television as a champion. And I just don't see evidence that she's either has an aptitude or is working hard to get better or is aware of how awkward she comes across. And man, it sounds like I'm being hard on, but you got to be hard on people who are on national cable television, taking TV time from other people who might be more polished in that way or who aren't improving. And Statlander has some things going for her, but I don't know that she's champion centerpiece material in terms of what I'm seeing from her right now. What do you think, Greg?
And you also have to remember, she was the one that ended Jade Cargill's reign. And Tony Khan thought so highly of her that they waited and waited past the point of the expiration date of Jade Cargill basically being a top character to have Chris Statlander come back from injury and take the title from Jade Cargill when they had opportunities to strike while the iron was hot with Jade Cargill and have someone else win the title. And, you know, by the time Chris Statlander came back, Jade Cargill was not as hot as a character as she was earlier. So, you know, that was a mistake, I think. And then, you know, Statlander's title reign just has not really been anything to write home about. And a lot of it does have to do with her character and her presentation. You know, it's nice that they're positioning her as a babyface who has friends. I think that's admirable. That's something that wrestling should have more of. But you're right. Her character is very unclear. And this is – I mean, think about the amount of TV time that she's had as TBS champion. And we still don't know really much about her. She's friends with the best friends, which I think that's when she's most likable, I think, is when she's around Orange Cassidy and Trent and those guys. But when she's on her own, it just – you just don't get a good sense of who she is and what she stands for.
And I'm so irritated by Taven and Bennett. doing the Wiener Punch and having like the best friends do their shtick. And then you, I mean, it's like, there's just, to me, there's too much kind of like nerd humor on AEW, and Statlander does seem to sort of fit in there, but she doesn't really contribute in a way that makes, that's distinct. She's like friends with people who are doing that kind of thing, but I don't think it helps elevate her to championship level when there's so much just sort of like insider or nerdy or ironic but not sophisticated humor going around on this show. Yeah, thank you. Sophomoric, yeah. I mean, I don't even like typing punch him in the wiener. Like, I don't even like, I just, it's like, it's professional wrestling, and it just almost feels too lowbrow and dumb to type out their t-shirt phrase and their finisher. And I feel bad for Tony Schiavone having to say it, but and part of the problem is they're just so delighted with themselves for it. And, yeah, and they just don't realize everybody has sophomoric thoughts. Like, they can, you know, you can think of silly, dumb things to say that would have made your friends laugh when you're in third grade, but then you turn 14 and you stop doing that. And they're still acting like emotionally stunted kids who are 9 or 11. And it's just, it's embarrassing. It's not clever enough. And yet they're walking around with that on their t-shirts. So I know how the Statlander thing turned into me ranting about that, but but I wanted to sneak it in somehow. So this, when you brought up the best friends, I'm like, I got to talk about
it. Well done.
AEW shows are not cool enough. It needs to be a more cool product. And
I mean, imagine saying that when it first debuted.
Know.
You know, so
well,
AEW
no,
was
– Greg, sorry. Their pre-show was awful. And I texted Tony Khan, and I told him that pre-show was awful. And he's like, yeah, you're not going to see that again. I wasn't in charge of that. And it wasn't like that again. Like, the actual first impression on the first pre-show, their first pay-per-view, was it was like the librarian, and they were just, you know, the shush thing. And people watching, some people knew, most didn't know what was going on, and even those who knew thought it was dumb. And then the pay-per-view started, and you're like, ah, now we're talking. This is what the press release touted. So Tony does know the difference, but he's let all this stuff leak back into the show.
Yeah, and so, yeah, that, and then even the first several months of Dynamite, I mean, it was the cool thing. And you had all these cool wrestlers, and they were being introduced to a national audience, some for the first time. And it was really the cool show in professional wrestling. And WWE was lagging way behind at the time. And now to see where they've come from that to, you know, it, some of the stuff that you're seeing today on AEW television, it's like, where did they go wrong? I mean, there just is not a lot. Even MJF, who as a heel was very cool. And he's, you know, I think, I don't know if he's being tried to be ironic or what kind of purpose this serves, but it is a significant left turn from the kind of character that he was. And I does work on some levels because you see him get a move as simple as the kangaroo kick over. And I mean, that's, there's something to be said for that, like the simplicity of it. But I don't think you can argue that he's lost a lot of cool points for whatever that's worth since this baby face turn that he's taken. So yeah, the shows from that era, those early Dynamite shows to where we are today, match quality probably is in the ballpark, maybe a little less because you're not seeing, I think you're seeing less stars maybe wrestling on TV than you were then. But it's similar. You know, you still have that high match quality, but the characters, the coolness factor, I think has lost a lot since then.
And I think wrestlers are mistaking crowd pops for zany, silly stuff in front of 3,500 fans as being over and helping AEW grow.
And we're seeing that in the ratings. We're seeing that in the draws at the houses. You know, they're getting pops for these moves, but the attendance is down, the ratings are down. So, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth it to pop a crowd once to see these numbers that you're seeing business wise?
Like, I'm sad watching Danny Garcia. Like, you know, think that this is his thing that's going to get him over. It's like Terry Taylor always said, well, people still come up to me and go, we know you more as a Red Rooster than as anything I did before. Well, right, but that gimmick with you walking around bobbing your head with red spiked hair took you from a potential Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, a top-level heel to a mid-card joke that, yes, people remembered, but not fondly in a way that matches his aspirations and talent level as a breakout star in the mid-80s who could have been a top-level heel. So the idea that, you know, Garcia's like, oh, when people see me, they want me to do the dance. Yeah, but they're kind of laughing at you behind your back. They don't see right. you as a tough guy or a star anymore. They see you as a court jester, and he can be more than that.
Yeah, and they're not buying a ticket to go watch Daniel Garcia dance, I don't think.
Well, you know what? There might be a couple dozen people who are like, that's part of why they're buying the ticket, but I bet there's a thousand people who are like, I'm not in AEW anymore because of stuff like that. And
yeah.
So he mistakes three people at ringside going, yay, do the dance, I'm doing the dance, as being over, or something, you know, something going more viral than one of his matches. But the definition of growing a wrestling company and selling tickets and filling stadiums and getting fans invested in your matches and the stakes of the matches, you don't gauge that on how viral some video goes, or if you become a GIF, or if people are chanting for something, but they're kind of laughing at you and don't take you seriously. That's not the end goal if you're a pro wrestler. But I think a lot of people are confused about that right now.
Yeah.
All right. I'll end with this. This is actually an email that is not about Collision specifically, but it ties into our conversation, and it's about AEW and WWE and comparing them. And it ties into our conversation about the Continental Classic. This comes from Sean D, who says, Wade, for weeks you've been talking about wanting to see AEW enforce rules and have consequences for breaking them. And I felt this week's Raw, they highlighted all the things that you've been saying with Adam Pearce across multiple segments. First, he took the briefcase away from Sammy off screen before the show, which I thought was totally trying to show up AEW. And then Seth and Sammy addressed it in the ring. It was a little thing that showed the GM had authority in exerting some control over the roster, including stolen property. Later during the entrances for the women's battle royal, Xia Li comes out and takes off Becky. And without missing a beat, Pearce entered to the back and said she's not getting a chance in the match because of her behavior prior to the bell. She didn't get to come out and take someone out and then get to benefit from it in the ring. Finally, after having his power and authority built up over the night, when he came out and decided to enforce war games on Cody, Jay, Sammy, Seth versus Judgment Day, it actually felt like a GM who was taking control of his show back from unruly talent. And there are actual rules and consequences. Yes, some of the enforcement is selective, as they had interference in DIY against the Creeds, and Ludwig seems to have suffered no ill effects for ruining their match, at least not yet. But it's still miles better than the complete lawlessness of AEW, where Jay White can run around a stolen property for weeks on end with no issue. Swerve can commit multiple felonies and then have a match on Collision like nothing's wrong. Or heels can just jump a babyface from behind before the match starts, and the ref and commentary just go along with the bell ringing after the attack and start the match anyway. I just want to take a moment and say a big thank you to WWE for really paying attention to the details this week. And ever since giving Pierce his official promotion to GM a few weeks ago, after years of being the bumbling middle management guy that everyone walked over. So to me, this is an example of where AEW, and when people go, sometimes people are like, oh, you know, too many people want AEW to be like WWE. It's like, in certain ways, yes, because WWE is actually doing some things now better than they were 6 years ago. And AEW feels behind. They still have some of these bad habit tropes that I think undercut. I think if heels don't seem like they're getting away with anything because there's no authority, there's no structure trying to hold them back and from cheating, there's less thrill in thrill's not the right word, but it just means less when heels cheat because it's like, well, whatever. No one's going to do anything about it. And so AEW can catch up in this area, and they are behind. And I hope the Continental Classic is sort of the excuse, Greg, for them to shift gears and go in that direction. And it would be good to have an authority figure like described here in this email about Adam Pearce, where there is a sense that there's some structure and that heels have to answer for their actions. Your thoughts?
And AEW certainly has enough legends on payroll to have
yes.
one of them play that role on screen.
Mark Henry would be fine. You know, that'd be, yes. I mean, just grabbing one name that comes to mind. Yeah.
Yep. And so, you know, you can even stretch that to Kevin Owens on SmackDown, where he was on commentary this week and he was told he would get, I can't remember if they said fined or suspended if he got physically involved in the show. And, you know, he, of course, was goaded into it by Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. But there was punishment for him doing that. And so, yeah, I do wonder if this has something to do with the GM battle that's brewing on WWE TV between Nick Aldis on SmackDown and Adam Pearce on Raw, if that's I don't know if it's leading to something or if it's just gotten the writing team more focused on those roles or what the answer is. But I do wonder if it's a coincidence that the tightening of the belts in terms of these sort of things is happening at the same time that they've given Adam Pearce Raw and they've given Nick Aldis SmackDown. And they've had a little bit of conflict between the two over the last few weeks. But yes, AEW could certainly use that on their shows. And, you know, I don't understand why they don't. You know, Tony Khan is a guy who, you know, everything that he says is a reverence for an era where all this stuff applied. And now on his own show, it's kind of, it almost feels like, I don't know if it's just that they don't think anyone's going to notice or if it's they're just too busy focusing on other things that they're not focusing on this. It's just – it's really weird that it's the little things. And once or twice you could say, for example, you know, I'll just use the example of the wrestler attacking someone before the bell and the bell ringing before both are on their feet and in their separate corners is, you know, if that happened once, you could say, okay, you know, that was just a mistake. They got their wires crossed out on the ring, whatever like that. But it happens so frequently that it's like, okay, no one is taking care of this. No one's noticing this. No one's speaking up. And, you know, you have producers, you have coaches in AEW who play the producer role for every match. You know, they're not being given instructions from on high that they should be watching out for this stuff. So, yeah. You know, that's the frustration there is, you know, you kind of come in with the expectation that Tony Khan is going to run a tighter ship when it comes to following the rules and doing things that make sense, which was a, you know, a long time criticism of WWE under Vince McMahon is that things just wouldn't make sense. And now that scale is tilted. It's WWE who's doing those things and AEW is coming up short in that.
And it's symptomatic or telling when it doesn't cross Tony Khan's mind or anyone in his circle to go, this makes no sense. Why do we let this happen? Like, it's not even like in and of itself, does it change the course of the company? No, but all these things add up, but it's sort of it's a surface level visible example of something. It's like if you're at a restaurant and the tables are dirty and there's dust and the floor isn't, you're like, what's the kitchen like? You know, how bad is a kitchen? Do I want to eat here if they can't keep the dining room clean as their public front facing? Or if the wind, even the window being all like smeared up, like they don't clean the wind. It's like, well, how dirty is it in the back? And that's sometimes what it feels like with the stuff on the surface. Like, well, that doesn't make much of a difference. But it's what's above ground that shows sort of a lack of discipline or a lack of vision or a lack of attention to detail that sort of permeates the product in ways that I do think make the strengths of AEW less effective with the audience they have and the ability to grow it.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating when you're watching TV and this stuff happens, and especially the Swerve stuff. I mean, the going into Adam Page's home, and I mean, that's just such a WWE thing in the most pejorative way, you know,
yeah.
You know, not having any consequence and doing something that by all rights you should get arrested for. And it's no, let's settle it in the ring. Let's settle it with a Texas death match, as we learned tonight on Collision. So it just really takes you out of the moment when these two are having a really nice feud and then they do something that goes just above and beyond the world, the universe of professional wrestling, and just takes you out of that moment.
Speaking of Hangman Page, there were things to like about his promo. I can imagine some people thinking that was great, and I'm tempted to compliment the aspects about it that I liked, but it also
you're being very careful about this.
Yes, but I also have mixed feelings. One, because I just don't know how you can make sense out of a home invasion angle. So that's part of it. But it just felt like it was like it just got heavier and heavier and heavier handed. You know, you won't be able to walk or talk at any future events because I'll be taking you to the abyss and I'll leave you in the fire for eternity. And then I'm going to every November, my son is going to visit your grave and I'm going to watch my son piss on your grave. And it's like, whoa, slow down. Like one out of those last eight things would have been fine. But like edit, it just like the delivery, the pacing, if he has the volume down, oh, man, this guy's angry and a kick ass. But by the time he was done talking, it was like every type of really heavy-handed threat. And it was. And again, I'm just not a fan of, like, tawdriness on wrestling shows. Like, I sat through too many shows where I just felt dirty after watching them. And, like, I didn't like rush spitting across the ring. I don't think, if you get punched and you do the sort of spit thing, I don't even like that much anymore because it sort of became a cliche. But spitting on wrestlers, that should be like, no, we don't do that. We're on national cable. And saying, I'm going to watch my son piss on your grave? Like, really? Like, I don't know. I think there's a more, like, for lack of a better term, sophisticated way to express your anger and vile towards someone than the word salad of just one heavy-handed threat after another from Hangman. So, like, there were, again, like, and it sounds counterintuitive. It's like, well, he invaded his home. Shouldn't he be just throwing everything at him? And it's like, sometimes fewer words are better, and understating things and leaving a little to our imagination is better. So what did you think watching it, Greg? What do you think of my critique of it?
Yeah, I agree. It definitely felt like this was maybe an overcorrection for the fact that there were no consequences for Swerve invading the home, is that they felt that they really needed, if there were going to be no consequences legally or from AEW, then they really needed Hangman Page to come out and cut a really scathing promo on Swerve. And it seems like they probably spent a lot of time writing that promo, I'll say that. And Page, I thought, delivered it. I mean, the delivery was good. I think you noted that. But the content was real hit or miss. And by the end, it just kind of felt, it did feel too written, I guess, for a guy who was really angry, and this guy broke into his home, and yeah, you're going to be really angry, and maybe you're going to say some things, and you're going to go a little too far in what you say, but the things that Paige said just felt too rehearsed and too, I mean, those are not things that you would say off the cuff when you're angry, and so I think that was another problem with it as well.
Yeah. Anything else, Greg, from tonight's Collision or Rampage from last night, since they kind of were, back to back?
No, I think that that hits the big points.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks to our callers, our on-site correspondent, our emailers. And thank you, Greg Parks. What's coming up tomorrow night on Wrestling Night in America?
Tomorrow night, Wrestling Night in America, 8 p.m. Eastern at pwtorchdailycast.com. There'll be a free full preview of AEW Full Gear. So I'll have Kevin Catani on with me, pwtorch.com contributor. He covers AEW. So I'm happy to have him on, very knowledgeable about the topic, and we're going to go match by match through Full Gear. So if you're listening now, I assume you're an AEW fan, so I ask you to tune in. We take phone calls and emails just like Wade does on these post shows. You can email us any thoughts or opinions on the Full Gear card or any matches on the Full Gear card. You can send those to WNIALivecast@gmail.com, or you can listen live and call us up, 515-605-9345. Again, we go on the air 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com. Full preview of next week's Full Gear.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. We will talk to you soon, and have a great next weekend.
Awesome. Thank you, Wade.
You bet.